Well, speaking of circle back sake, the entire administration's going to have to be circling back after OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, suspended its work on Brandon's Biden vaccine mandate. Yeah, after a federal appeals court hit pause on rules that was going to force companies, possibly like yours, with 100 or more employees to require COVID-19 vaccinations or regular testing for coronavirus. So OSHA yesterday said, you know what? With the 5th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals decision to stay the mandate, we are putting a pause on our plans to implement this. So that's a big win. That's a good job by attorneys general. That's a good job by state legislators. That's a good job by the private sector like Ben Shapiro and his Daily Wire outlet filing lawsuits. That is the culmination of all of this. Now, it's not done yet. It's not. But it certainly is looking pretty darn good. Because I've often and I've long thought that, you know, private business should be able to do what it wants, right? If you're a business with 10 people and you want to have a COVID-19 vaccine mandate, I disagree with it, but it's your business. You can do what you want, whether you've got 10, 100, or 1,000 people. It is your business. But then to have the government coming over the top and demanding that you do something along these lines, well, that was always unconstitutional, and it didn't take long for the courts to say, whoa, 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 whoa. Hang on here. Hang on here, old Joe boy. You can't be doing this. You can't. And this was a big news, big win yesterday, good stuff all around. But the question was always, why was the Biden administration doing this? What was the goal here? I mean, they knew that this was overreach. They understood deep down. They understood this would likely be indefensible in court. So why were they doing this? And why, up until last week, were they saying, don't worry about it. Don't worry about what the courts are saying. Just do it. Imagine if Trump did that. Like, just reverse the roles for a second here. And you've got Trump demanding business do something that is basically unconstitutional, and then the courts tell him to knock it off, and he's like, nope, just keep going. Keep it rolling, baby. Good times. Could you imagine? Literally, you would see the fire breathing out of the mouths of CNN and MSNBC anchors if Trump had done something along these lines. Demand the private sector do something that's unconstitutional. And then when the courts shut it down, he says, nope, keep going. Just listen to me. Do not listen to the courts. Don't worry about what's constitutional. Listen to me, your king, your savior. And in the case of the Joe Biden, I mean, this is the problem for the guy. When he said he would shut down the virus, all right, it was always an empty promise. Because believe it or not, one guy is not going to shut down a virus.
Talk about a bombshell.
I know. It's a surprise to some of you that one guy is not going to just end up in the White House and then he's going to magically shut down the virus, John.
Yeah, he's full of them. He's got some good ones coming. There's some more new ones, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He's just full of those kinds of things.
I mean, you go back and you look about 14 months ago at this time, we're shutting down the virus. Well, you haven't shut down the virus. You did not shut down the virus. You were never going to be able to shut down the virus. Never going to work that way. So he knew this thing was indefensible in court, but he hoped, and this is what I believe the administration was thinking, let's just see if we can scare people and scare companies and pressure employers to comply before any litigation really starts going. Because let's be honest, most businesses, most companies, HR departments, they just want to go along to get along. That's what they do. They just want to comply. That's what HR is. My wife used to do it for a living. It's compliance. That's your job. The people that work in HR are not typically rule breakers. Right? They're not people who are looking to cut corners. They're not people who are looking to, pull an over on you. They're people traditionally who just want to play by the rules and go by the book. So the only people who were really, the administration was hoping, the only people who were really going to push back were those who, for whatever reason, like Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro's company, had an obvious reason to, or it was part of their brand to say, no, 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 we are not complying. We are not doing this. And that still appears to be part of the conversation here. You're not getting a lot of news necessarily on this all over the place. Now, you are in certain corners, but if you look right now on CNN.com, all right, there's one story, no picture tied to it, about OSHA. Just one. That's it. So they're trying to, I believe, kind of make it like, yeah, OSHA's kind of pausing its activities when it comes to vaccine mandates or regular testing. But don't worry. It's all good. All right? Don't sweat it. Now, locally, Governor Kelly, governor of Kansas, Democrat, who came out against these vaccine mandates a couple of weeks ago. After this news broke yesterday that OSHA said it will temporarily not enforce the COVID-19 federal vaccine mandate on private employers, Governor Kelly put out a tweet saying this is the right decision by OSHA. As I've said before, states have been leading the fight against COVID-19. It's too late to impose a federal standard, which is why I oppose the Biden administration's mandate for private businesses. Whether or not she truly believes that, I have no idea. But I do know this. She's heading into an election year. It's going to be a very difficult re-election for her and her only chance. There's no way that Governor Kelly in Kansas can get re-elected. She couldn't get re-elected against a dog catcher if she didn't come out in some way against the COVID-19 vaccine mandate. And that's just her only chance. Now, Derek Schmidt, who is her likely opponent, he's the attorney general for the state. He responded to Governor Kelly. He said, this wasn't OSHA's decision, Governor. He says, this was a result of our Republican attorneys general lawsuits. I did that right, by the way. Attorneys general. I worked very hard on that in the mirror last night, knowing that I was going to be talking about attorneys general.
Nice. Well done, sir.
Thank you very much there. Let me just give myself a quick round of applause, if I may. Attorneys general, thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Let me take a bow. All right. So Schmidt goes on to say on Twitter, this was a result of our Republican attorneys general lawsuits and federal judges telling the Biden administration it cannot proceed with this illegal mandate. We're going to keep fighting, as we have been since this was announced in September. So that's Derek Schmidt's way of saying, whoa, 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 if you think you're going to get around this one, not so fast. Because this is, for someone like Governor Kelly, this is very good for her. This is a political win for her. Because, yes, there's going to be that special session next week where the state legislature tries to create and will create, I believe, pass a bill around a religious exemption for the COVID-19 vaccine mandate, and then it will go to Governor Kelly's desk. What she will do remains to be seen, but if all this stuff gets thrown out in court, then ultimately she'll be able to get a win without actually having to make a decision on a piece of legislation. But it's still, do not kid yourself. And Governor Kelly and her campaign team should not kid itself. They have a very difficult road for re-election, even though this was good for her politically, a very difficult road for re-election. 5767710 is how you join us here to kick off a Thursday morning on KCMO Talk Radio. We're going to have Quentin Lucas in his 7:30 spot, Josh Hawley at 8:30 as well here on KCMO Talk Radio. But if you are on the employee side of this, as many of you are, is your employer, do they know what's going on? Do they care? Or are they going down the road of simply saying, well, we just want to comply. We just want to comply. By the way, speaking of attorneys general, the attorney general in Missouri, Eric Schmidt, oh boy, he dunked all over the Lincoln Project yesterday. We'll tell you about that coming up here on KCMO Talk Radio. You know, I do wonder this, too, as we sit here and wait to figure out what's going to happen in the courts with the Brandon vaccine mandate that's come down. OSHA says it will temporarily stop any plans to implement the COVID-19 vaccine requirement or weekly testing of private employers with at least 100 employees. So it's temporarily on hold. But I do wonder this. I mean, at what point are we going to say, well, being fully vaccinated has to include a booster? When does that start, right? That's the next step here. When is it, well, if you're vaccinated, you're not fully vaccinated anymore because you don't have the booster shot. Like, when does that begin, John?
Right. No, absolutely. Like, so the definitions of infrastructure can change. So,
yep.
Right. Vaccinated yep. is open to interpretation, huh? Right?
Absolutely.
I guess so.
Absolutely. And this just came down here yesterday. The governor of New Mexico, Michelle Grisham, said that she believes being fully vaccinated against COVID means people must have a booster shot. So, like, this thing just goes around and around and around. And you know, there's no end or definition or specific meaning in sight. Tim is in Kearney. Hey, Tim, good morning. Thanks for joining us. What's on your mind?
So my question is with these vaccines have been around for a long time. Parents have been forced to give their kids vaccines so that they can go to school. A few years ago, there was a number of parents that said, hey, we don't want our kids vaccinated. These vaccines are made by human. Even though they've been around a long time, humans do make errors. Any one of these vaccines could have some kind of error. We don't see that it's fit that we should put our kids and make them take this vaccine. How do we make our kids take a vaccine and then tell adults you don't have to take a vaccine? I'm going to hang up and listen.
Tim, I don't know if you hung up yet, but I'm trying to follow that one. So who is saying that the kids need it but the adults don't?
The kids are forced, all vaccines, your measles, your mumps, your yep. polio. You know, there's a whole list of vaccines we have to give our kids when
correct.
They're born.
Correct.
The first, like, 7 years of life.
Correct.
They go
yep.
through about 14 shots
yep.
of
yep.
vaccines.
Yep.
So we've been forced to put those vaccines in our children for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And then now all of a sudden we're going to tell people, well, you can have a choice. Well, where's the choice for the kids? As adults, we have to...
Yes. Okay. I see what you're saying. All right. So I will answer that one offline. To me, they're different for a couple of reasons, Tim. I mean, you know, my kids are 3 and almost 6 months. Wow. 6 months last week. Boy, time flies. 6 months last week. And they both gotten all the shots that they're supposed to get up until, you know, the ages that they are. And don't even question it. Do it. I mean, if that's something that you don't want to do. Now, to me, when you're talking about measles and mumps and things like that, it's a different conversation because those things have been around for years and years and years. And also, the difference with COVID is that you have variants, right? I mean, it's more like the flu where there's variants to it and it mutates. Measles and mumps, they don't mutate like that. I mean, they are what they are. So to me, it's different from that perspective. And, you know, no one's saying you have to get your child vaccinated necessarily. It just means that you couldn't go to, you know, you'd have to figure out a different form of schooling, right? I mean, that's the difference here. And with COVID, it's so unique because of what it is and because of the fact that you can't have a serious conversation about demanding a COVID-19 vaccine and not seriously consider or look into the idea of natural immunity. I mean, if you want to say, well, I mean, everyone's got to get the COVID-19 vaccine, when you know that someone having natural immunity has far more protection than somebody in some cases who has a vaccine, I mean, then what are we doing here? What are we talking about here? How is that not a legitimate part of the conversation? So I do think it's a nuanced difference there, Tim, but it is, as far as I'm concerned, there is a difference. I understand your concern there, but I do believe that there are differences based on at least, you know, what you and I were going back and forth on that conversation. 5767710 is how you join us here on KCMO Talk Radio on a Thursday morning. On the text line, if they want to send their kids to public schools, no one is forcing anyone to do anything. We choose to send them to the public schools. That is right. That is accurate on the text line. Texter 8003. Pete, you know that Joe's going to be coming down with three shots. Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom.
There you go. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, that's good. That's very good. Let's go to Matt. He's on KCMO. What's up there, Matt? Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Pete. How are you today?
Doing well. Happy Thursday, Matt. What's up?
Happy Thursday. Well, your last caller kind of chuckled me, and I may be misunderstanding him, but he seemed to be a little upset that how dare we force our children to take immunizations and then refuse to take a vaccination ourselves. And there's so much difference between the two, but it was just cracking me up. He seemed pretty passionate. And part, you know, whether you're for or against the vaccine, that's your business. But if I get it and you don't, I'm protected. You're not.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you want to play in the street, then play in the street. You know, I drank from the garden hose, man, and I lived, you know. so I just think the whole thing's kind of funny. And I honestly think it's all a political distraction. I'm not hearing anything about the people we've left behind. All the horrible things going on with this administration, you don't hear because they keep shaking this rattle in your face going, look over here.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's not a bad point there, Matt. But this thing, and thanks for the call, this thing is so politically unpopular in large swaths of America, not just here in Kansas and Missouri. But, I mean, I saw some polls the other day that showed the Biden himself with approval ratings down in the low 30s in Florida. And part of it is because of decisions like this. So maybe it is a distraction, but it's amazing that if you're doing this as a distraction, this mandate to OSHA that employers vaccinate or test their employees every week, if you're doing it as a distraction, then boy, you must really, because this is not a popular distraction, right? You must really think that your other ideas and your other policies are just that much more horrible than this one. That's got to be the only answer, John. It's the only thing I can think of. Oh, man.
Sometimes it's the choice of lesser of evils. So I don't know. I mean, they're not in a situation where they've got too many positive things to work with.
Well, that is true.
Right.
It's too bad.
This one maybe has the broadest appeal, if you will.
It's like, can we get a team to the White House here for some photos or something? Can somebody win a championship? They're going to be having teams to the White House when they clinch divisional titles in the NFL,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Hey, come on down, Chiefs. You won the AFC West. Come on in. Come on down. What do you mean? We just won the AFC West. Oh, we need some good news. Come on down. We got a game Sunday. We can't make it. Oh, darn it. Oh,
come on, man.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I mean, when you're searching for good news, got to search long and hard right now for that good news. All right, we'll tell you about Eric Schmidt dunking on the Lincoln Project and what happened there. Also, you want to fix the affordable housing crisis? I mean, man, I may mention this to Mayor Lucas here in an hour, depending on where the conversation goes. But I saw another example of that being done yesterday. We'll get to it next. I hate to be this heavy on a Thursday morning, but yesterday was a tragic milestone that was announced here in this country. Yesterday, we found out that in 1 year, for the first time ever, 100,000 Americans died of drug overdoses in a single year, from about May of 2020 to April of 2021. Drug overdoses now surpass deaths from car crashes, flu, pneumonia, and it's close to that for diabetes, which is the nation's number 7 cause of death in this country. The estimates are 1,300 Americans died of drug overdoses from May of last year to April of this year. And when you see who these individuals are, the vast majority of them, per the doctors who are quoted in this piece I'm reading from the New York Times, occurred in people ages 25 to 55, in the prime of their life. And what is causing this? Well, it's fentanyl is a big driver of all of this. That is, of course, you know, lacing things like heroin, that is, you know, being used as a replacement for opioids and whatnot. But you're mixing, and these drug dealers are mixing fentanyl with other drugs, and it is far more deadly than anything, frankly, we've seen. And you can lace fentanyl in anything, from marijuana to heroin and everything in between, cocaine, whatever you want. Now, why did this happen? Let's start with the why and then figure out the what behind it, too. Why did this happen? Why did we just, in the middle of, you know, shutting down an entire economy, driving people out of work, driving people into isolation, is anyone surprised by this? As sad as this is anybody surprised? I'm not. We talked about it last year. We talked about it over the past 12 months or so. That by driving people into isolation, especially people who were always younger and healthier, and driving them out of work, saying, no, 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 you can't go out. You can't, you know, go to a gym and exercise. You can't go to a restaurant with a friend. You can't go to a bar and have a beer with a buddy because, well, COVID. Because, well, 14 days to slow the spread. And a lot of people, too, you couldn't go to things like your NA or AA meetings in some cases, right? All of a sudden, that was on Zoom. I mean, and we know how terrible Zoom was for those of us who work in the corporate world. I mean, it was a joke. I hope we never go back to that. I mean, there's nothing personable. It's fine. It's serviceable if you're in a pinch, right? It'll do. But if you thought that the creative juices were flowing in your workplace on Zoom like they were in an in-person meeting, you're kidding yourself. It never came close to that. And now you have people who are needing those reinforcements, right? As oftentimes addicts can be. They need that. They need that camaraderie. They need to know that, hey, I'm going here every week or here twice a week, whatever it is. And you know, I can speak to it firsthand, not for me personally, but for people close to me. You need that kind of structure sometimes, oftentimes. And when COVID hit, it all went away because, well, we had to stop the spread because, well, politics got involved. Right. And, you know, there was a period of time there for the first couple of months, several weeks, where it was like, OK, we don't know what the heck's going on. Got to shut things down. OK, understood it. All understood it. But then as time went on and people wanted this to last forever, and some people especially wanted to use it to politicize it leading into an election, it only made things worse for many people who were already struggling and who, by the way, were younger and were far more likely to just be protected because of their age and because of their health status than, let's say, an 85-year-old. We've known this for a very long time. So now we're sitting here and we're looking back on these numbers and we're surpassing 100,000 drug overdoses for the first time ever in this country. And it's like, wow, what happened? Well, number one, the government happened. Number one, the government made decisions that, unfortunately, as much as I believe in personal responsibility, when you're talking about people who need certain structures, who need help, who were more likely to be laid off, by the way, because if you're in an entry-level job at wherever it might be and you're on the rebound from whatever issues you may have been dealing with, you are probably someone who, unfortunately, was possibly more likely to lose their job last spring. So that was also a factor that didn't work out for a lot of people. So this whole notion of, well, you know, we were just trying to slow the spread of COVID. Well, guess what? You also did a lot of damage to a lot of people, and I believe that is a huge reason for why this number topped 100,000 over the past year, drug overdoses in this country for the first time ever. And then the issue of fentanyl. Where is this coming from? The drug cartels in Mexico. The drug cartels in Mexico are using chemicals from China, and they're mass producing and distributing fentanyl and meth all across America. That's what's happening every single day in this country. You know, this year, the DEA, Drug Enforcement Administration, has seized 12,000 pounds of fentanyl. That's a record amount. How much are we missing? How much are we not getting? How much is just pouring across the border and we have no idea that it's coming across this border? You and I both know that it's happening. And we've got an administration that is so laissez-faire on the southern border. This should not be political. This should not be about left versus right, R versus D, Dem versus Republican. Do you believe that fentanyl should be pouring across this border? If the answer is no, then we should all be on the same page that the border has got to be tightened up. And when we are having record amounts of folks coming across the border, it's not to be anti-immigrant. It's not. There's nothing about it that is anti-immigrant. It's, do you want a process of, first off, having people come to this country, making sure that you know the people who are coming to this country, and then also making sure you know what is coming into this country. Not just who, but what is coming into this country. And frankly, I believe that we do get too caught up in the who is coming into this country, because maybe it's more, maybe it drums up the emotions a little bit more. But to me, the what, the fentanyl that is pouring into this country every single day from the drug cartels in Mexico and then indirectly from the chemicals in China are killing, in this case, helping kill tens of thousands, now over 100,000 people in this country over the past 12 months. How is this possible that it can break down along political lines? How could you possibly make the case at 5767710 that, well, you're just anti-immigrant or something ridiculous like that? And the administration, by the way, did put out a statement on this yesterday. How nice of them. Put out a statement. Joe Biden called it a tragic milestone. Wow.
Talk about a bombshell.
Strong stuff. Strong stuff. What do they want to do? They're pressing Congress to devote billions of dollars more to address the problem. Dr. Raul Gupta, director of National Drug Control Policy, says this is unacceptable and it requires an unprecedented response. How about you just look at the border? Can you just look at the border, please? You, oh my goodness, please. I don't want to have to have Mark hit the dump button. But this issue, to me personally, means a lot. And just culturally and societally and for the country, it should mean a lot to all of us. And by the way, the overdose death changes year over year, one of the highest increases in the country is right here in Kansas. From April of 2020 to April of 2021, we saw a 46% increase in Kansas in overdose deaths. In Missouri, it was only about, and you say, hate to say only, but it was 15% in Missouri. It was 46% in Kansas. The states with the highest increases in overdose deaths, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, Mississippi, Louisiana, South Carolina, California, and Oregon. And then there's Kansas, inside the top 10. Of highest increases in overdose deaths over the past year. It's affecting our communities. It's affecting your communities. And, you know, if you have kids in schools, by the way, and they're messing around with this stuff, their friends are messing around with this stuff, they don't know what is in it. Whether it's marijuana to the harder stuff, they don't realize what is in it in many cases. And it's resulting in tens of thousands of mostly young people dying every single month now across this country. 5767710. I want to welcome you on. I know, especially parents, you know, you're dealing with this because this is not, it's not your marijuana from 50 years ago even, okay? It's just not. And someone's got to wake up on this stuff. Someone has got to realize and connect the dots on how our COVID policy combined with our border policy has directly led to a record number of overdoses in this country today. Pete Mundo on KCMO Talk Radio. First time in the country's history, 100,000 drug overdoses. Sad, sad state of affairs, mostly young people. Combine the border crisis, the fentanyl pouring across the border with, you know, forcing young, healthy people into isolation in too many instances over the past 18 months. And this is what you get. Kansas in the top 10 in the country in increases in overdose deaths year over year. 46% increase from 383 in April of 2020 to 558 for the 12 months ending in April of 2021. It's just absolutely tragic. Absolutely tragic. Let's go to Mike, who is in Overland Park. Hi, Mike. Good morning. You're on KCMO. How are you?
How are you doing?
What's happening?
Can you hear me?
Yep, I got you, Mike. What's going on?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, Mike, what's happening?
Oh, not a lot. How you doing, Pete?
All right, what's going on? What's on your mind?
Well, I just was hearing you talk on the radio here, and I'm a recovering drug addict. I've been sober for over a year now, and just a lot of that stuff I can really relate to what you're talking about. About a year and a half ago, I was doing a lot of meth, and I went in to take a couple of UAs from my probation officer, and they told me that I was doing fentanyl as well as meth, and I assured them that that was not the case, but apparently they're cutting it with fentanyl. And I currently work in an industry where there's a lot of Mexican immigrants that work with me, and I've started talking politics with them a couple of times, and I'm a Donald Trump fan. I like Donald Trump, and to my surprise, a couple of these guys are also Trump fans. You know, I started talking to them about it, and they're like, no, we need to build a wall. Like, you guys don't understand. There's people there that you do not want coming here. And these are guys that come directly from Mexico. So I was pretty shocked to hear that.
Wow. Now, what was it for you, Mike, in the last 12 months or so that made you decide that, you know, you were going to turn things around?
It's just not the way to live, man. I mean, it got to the point where I was homeless. I had no money, no job. My family had enough with me, and just kind of hit rock bottom. You know, I mean, that happened several times, and it's not easy. It took me a while to get finally cleaned up. I gave it several attempts, like 8 or 9 attempts, actually.
That's got to be pretty hard to do in the middle of COVID, Mike, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. The legal system helped a little bit. I stopped fighting it. You know, I got arrested several times, and instead of just going to jail and, you know, putting on house arrest and all that stuff, I finally kind of let them give me the opportunity to to help me, and they've really, really helped me turn things around. And I mean, like I said, it's been over a year for me, which is incredible. For this, the furthest I ever made it was like 2 months.
Wow.
So I really feel like I've got my feet under me, and things are going great. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, there is help out there for people that need it. Mm-hmm. You can do something about it.
Mike, thank you for sharing your story, being willing to share your story. If I may ask as well, in terms of, you know, what you were doing drug wise, and what did you say was laced with the fentanyl that you didn't realize?
It was fentanyl was laced with the meth. So like I would go in to take I'd go in to take drug tests, and my probation officer would tell me, like, you know, you failed for meth and fentanyl. And I would say, oh, okay, well, no, I'm sure I failed for meth. Yes, I agree with you there, but I'm not doing fentanyl. And he said, yes, you are.
Wow.
This happened twice.
Wow. And you trusted the people that you were, I assume, getting this meth from. And did they know that it was had fentanyl in it? Did they have any idea, you think?
I don't know if they knew. The people that, probably not the people that I was getting it from, but the people they were getting it from, I'm certain came directly across the southern border. I mean, I was there when that transaction happened, allegedly, and they didn't speak English half the time. So, I mean, that is where it's coming from.
Wow.
Hey, without a doubt.
Mike, I know every day is a battle, man. Every day is a battle. I don't know it firsthand, but, you know, people close to me deal with it every day. And thank you for being willing to share that story and talk about this and share this with the audience. I know it's tough, man, so I appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Well, hey, keep doing a great job.
You too. Hey, you keep doing a great job, all right, Mike?
Yes, sir. Thanks, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. It's a guy right there, you know, was failing drug tests for fentanyl, didn't even know he was taking fentanyl. What would have prevented a guy like Mike from taking too much meth, doing too much meth one time, and he's one of these 100,000? Don't even know this stuff is in it. And then that's a great story, too, when he's saying he's working with Mexican-American immigrants, and they're like, guys, you don't realize how bad it is. You just don't realize how bad it is.
Sure. Jorge from Kansas City, Kansas calls him from time to time. He's kind of warned us about the same.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
Very true. Jim in Independence, you're on KCMO Talk Radio. Hello, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning, Pete. You know, I lost my grandson last year to a drug overdose. He was a senior, 2 years or 2 months from graduation, and he lived with us. And I'm relatively sure after talking, you know, to all of his regular friends that he didn't regularly do any drugs. He went out with a friend of his that was a couple years older than him. And my grandson didn't, you know, he had what money was what we gave him when he was going out. So he didn't have money to buy drugs. And it was fentanyl mixed with coke or cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was kind of a go along to get along kind of guy. And, you know, law enforcement, in my, you know, the way they reacted, they don't really care. You know, it's what are we supposed to do? You know, there's no way to find out anything, you know, and your phone companies, Apple in particular was who his phone was with. You know, all we wanted Apple to do was unlock the phone so we could find out where he had been, you know, to possibly find out where he might have or where they might have picked up the drugs. And there's no way to force them to do it. The government, you know, they ought to be some rules where, you know, they can do that.
Yeah.
You know, and as far as a war on drugs, there is no war on drugs. They don't care. The judges let them go.
Well,
you know?
let me add this there, Jim. First off, I mean, I am so sorry for your loss, number one. And you know, that's an example, too, of a kid who, according to you, wasn't really tied up in that stuff. Wrong place, wrong time, little too much, doesn't know what he's taking. And he's one of these 100,000 plus over the past year. I mean, it's as sad and simple as that. Right, Jim?
Yeah, and it killed both of them. It killed him and his friend.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, it's a bad deal, but, you know, until law enforcement steps in and starts cracking down, you know, there's got to be a way to stop it.
You know, the
mothers against drug drivers have all this power. Where's all the power against the drugs?
Well, you know, Jim, I see what you're saying. I think this is above local law enforcement at this point, and I think it's kind of some of the bigger picture stuff we're talking about. How do you prevent... the fentanyl, I mean, you can't stop everything, but boy, I mean, when you're setting records in drug overdoses over the past 12 months, this is the problem here, Jim. This is the problem. And it's a federal government response to me. I mean, that's how I look at it. And Jim, thank you for the call and thank you for making it. And we're praying for you here. I'm so sorry to hear about that story. But
thank you.
I think about it and I say, I don't want the federal government to really do a lot in my life. Really, I really don't. But if they can't do the basics, one of which is to, you know, keep us safe as a country from outside forces. And in this case, you know, you got the fentanyl product coming from China, and then the Mexican drug cartels are pushing it into this country. The Mexican drug cartels and the communist Chinese government, two of our biggest enemies in the world. If you cannot get the American people safe from that, then what can you do? You can spend all the money you want and give me advanced child tax credit payments and all this junk and act like Santa Claus. But if you just can't keep things like the border safe from our enemies, why would I trust you to do anything? Coming up next, we're going to turn course. Mayor Quint Lucas is going to join us. He's right around the corner. News in a minute here on KCMO.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat because that should be your next question, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers? And Dave Roberts.
Hell yeah.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Well, Mayor Lucas won't be with us next Thursday because it is Thanksgiving. So he won't be joining us. Should have asked him if he's going to Rex Archer's house for Thanksgiving, his former health director there in town.
Thanksgiving.
Oh!
Boy, I love Thanksgiving.
Oh, gosh, Rex loves himself some turkey. You think Rex is a dark meat or a white meat guy? Rex is definitely a dark meat guy. He's got dark meat written all over him. I see it from a mile away. Loves the dark meat, Rex. Definitely see him as a dark meat.
I was going to say he's probably not that picky.
I was going to say he's an all meat guy too, John. Yeah.
He just likes the meat is what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right. So Rex he's a meat guy. All right. So Rex likes all meat. White, black meat. He likes it all. Okay. Sorry. All right. That's enough of Rex Archer liking meat. But anyway, former KCMO health director. I'm never going to get over that. That's just one of the all-time great clips. One of the great all-time local drops this city has ever provided. Somebody in this city has ever provided. So Thanksgiving's just days away. And, there's a lot of anxiety going into Thanksgiving. More than usual, not just because, you know, you got to see the in-laws or whatever it might be. But according to this report, a couple of factors may be driving that anxiety. Not seeing family for a long time. And worried about being around those who are not vaccinated. Oh, the dirty unvaccinateds being at Thanksgiving. It's funny, I won't say who, but this morning at about 5:40, I'm walking through the hallways, and I really, not going to lie, it's nothing personal. I don't really like talking to people here in the 5 a.m. hour before I go on the air, just because I'm trying to, you know,
harum.
Yeah. You know, I'm trying to prep for the show. My mind's spinning. My wheels are turning. But, you know, sometimes you bump into somebody in the break room and, you know, you got to do the small talk thing. Normally, once the show ends, I'll do all the small talk you want. But before then, 5 a.m., I'm not there yet. So you got to do the small talk. So what are you doing for Thanksgiving next week? Oh, gosh. So this person says to me, one of our 7 radio stations here, so you're not going to guess which one. Oh, we got our first gathering since COVID, first family gathering, a little nerve-wracking. I'm like, oh, yeah, well, you know, it's a lot easier not having to clean up over everybody. I said, yeah, and it's always awkward having to see, you know, crazy Uncle Gary for the first time in a while, right? And this person says to me, oh, well, I got my own Uncle Gary, and he's not coming up because he's not vaccinated. We said, you're not coming this year, Uncle Gary. You're not going to be joining us. Your whole family can't be here because you aren't vaccinated. What are we doing?
Oh, Uncle Gary didn't say that. That decision was made for him, right?
Correct. That decision was made from the top down, mm-hmm. thumbing their nose down at unvaccinated Uncle Gary and his family, who can't come to Thanksgiving dinner around a bunch of vaccinated people who I guess do not trust their own vaccine or something along those lines. Okay. All right. And by the way, these are all like, you know, young people as far as at least the people I talk to, young. So here's what this article says that I was reading. One of the ways to bring the stress level down is to ensure everyone in the house is vaccinated. Whoa, there we go.
Talk about a bombshell.
And those eligible have their booster shots. So yeah, it's not even good enough to be vaccinated now. Make sure that if you're going to have Thanksgiving, everyone's got to have the booster shot. Number 3, baby. Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom.
Thereby right. flexing the definition, as you pointed out earlier this morning.
Yep, exactly right. I already got the governor of New Mexico saying, hey, you're not fully vaccinated now in our state until you get the booster. So, experts are saying one way to build yourself up to the big Thanksgiving day is to take baby steps. Expose yourself to some of these social environments instead of going into a large setting. And what about a bit of alcohol to ease the tension? Experts suggest you do not go that route. All right, I'm done. You think you're going to spend time in a large family gathering and not have a couple of drinks, you can take that and stick it where the sun don't shine. All right, not at this Thanksgiving.
Not going to happen.
Not at my watch. Experts say substituting alcohol with anxiety reduction is not helpful and can have a harmful effect. Not for me, all right? It's the only way to get through an event like that. So I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, that's bad advice. I'm not a doctor, not a so-called expert, but I'll tell you right now. You think I'm getting through a Thanksgiving in a large family setting without a drink or two or half a dozen, you're crazy. You're absolutely crazy. But yeah, there's the advice. Don't drink and make sure everyone's vaccinated. Wow, that sounds like a lame-ass party to me. I don't know about you. That sounds like a lame party to me.
So. I'll go the opposite way. Free Red Bull and puppies for all the kids.
Look at John playing Santa Claus. Boy, Biden's going to give you a run for your money, though, with this Build Back Better.
He's giving away everything.
Yeah, he's giving away everything. Oh, my goodness. Coming up next, speaking of all this, OSHA is suspending. OSHA is putting a temporary halt on its plan to enforce COVID-19 vaccinations on employers. We'll tell you the latest coming up next. There's no hypocrisy here. Let's be very clear on the text line, which is 816-576-7710. Happy Thursday morning, by the way. There's no hypocrisy here when I talk about whether it's Thanksgiving dinner and how some people are insisting on if you aren't vaccinated, you can't show up to their Thanksgiving or something like that. Or it's OSHA now, you know, thankfully suspending their activities related to the Brandon vaccine mandate, where they want to, or they're going to put a hold on it because, well, the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said, whoa, 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 pump the brakes on this. Pump the brakes on having OSHA oversee demanding vaccinations or weekly testing for employers with at least 100 employees. It's not hypocrisy. I mean, I mention almost every time I talk about a story like this that, yes, I have gotten the vaccine. I mentioned that. But on the text line, when it says here, clearly just more hypocrisy, you get the vaccine, then ridicule the need for anyone else to get it. I'm not ridiculing anybody for getting it. I'm saying do what is in your best interest. If you want my opinion and you're 65 and overweight, I would have gotten it 10 months ago. That's me. But what it doesn't mean is that I'm going to shame you or not be around you as a younger, healthier person who also has gotten it. Why would I be afraid of you? Why would I not trust what I've gotten willingly? That's the part I genuinely, if someone can explain that one to me, I'm all ears. But I just don't understand how you can say, trust the science, rah-rah vaccine. Whoa, I don't trust, whoa, 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 whoa. But if you're around me and you don't have it, like, we already know that transmission can happen already between vaccinated people. You want a case in point, great example of this? The View. All right, remember that story, not even a story, what was that, a few weeks ago. Two of the cast members on The View, and I call them cast members because they're not like they're just actors. They're not serious people. They just regurgitate left-wing talking points, and then, you know, a bunch of woke housewives go, woo, all right, oh, I feel so virtuous watching this crap. Oh, this is so good. I mean, that's what it is. They literally had two people on their set, on their show, have to leave in the middle of the show because they tested positive for COVID despite the fact that they were all vaccinated. Yet you have, like, here's a great example of this. They had, and I always screw up her name, Jedediah Bila. She used to be on, I think it was Fox and Friends on the weekends. She has chosen not to get the vaccine because of some personal health issues and her doctor's recommendation. And her doctor, by the way, is a vaccinated doctor. So she was not allowed to go on The View in person. She went on Zoom. And she tried to talk this through with the ladies on The View, and it didn't go well. Here's what it sounded like.
What I just said to you is I am prioritizing my health, and people talk about the common
over
good.
Over the health and safety of other people.
You're not going to have a common good if you're not prioritizing your own health. You
over
have a Surgeon General.
This should, this should sound very familiar to you, Jed. This should sound very familiar to you. We got to go to break. And so I have to say... thanks to Jedediah Bila. You can buy Jed's book, Dear Hartley, starting today. And
so that's just, I mean, that's just a snippet of them talking over her and yelling at her and shaming her because her vaccinated doctor, based on her own health issues, told her at this point, don't get it. And if we can't have caveats and we can't have legitimate conversations built around that, what is wrong with us? And she gets shouted down and she gets yelled at by these ladies on The View saying, oh, you're just spreading misinformation. You're case in point, you guys. You were all vaxxed and you still ended up getting COVID on the set of the show until you had to walk off mid-show for testing positive. So it's not a being against it at all. I've gotten it And I certainly think that, you know, what it can do and the reason that you get it is because if you then contract the virus, it will limit whatever symptoms you end up getting. That's what it's good for. And especially for those who are high risk or older or weaker immune systems, it's incredibly effective. But that doesn't mean that you have to be for a mandate. Because you think it can be effective does not mean that you have to sit here and, well, why are you not for the mandate? Must be anti-vax. No. And certainly being against this ridiculous OSHA, top-down bureaucratic nonsense deal from the Biden administration, being against this is certainly not anti-vax, but this is how they want to change the conversation. This is how they want to basically use language and use definitions of language against people who are like, boy, this seems wildly unfair. This seems wildly unreasonable, does it not? Now, what happened here locally on this issue? Well, Governor Kelly in Kansas, Democrat, she applauded this move yesterday. So Governor Kelly, who's facing re-election in a year as a Democrat governor for Kansas, very tough re-election bid. After the news came down that OSHA says it's going to temporarily not enforce the COVID-19 federal vaccine mandate on private employers, the governor of Kansas said, quote, "This is the right decision by OSHA. As I've said before, states have been leading the fight against COVID-19. It's too late to impose a federal standard, which is why I oppose the Biden administration's mandate for private businesses." This is a huge home run and a win for Governor Kelly because she gets to kind of not have to impose any legislation on her end. And she can go, rah, rah, no vaccine mandate in Kansas, because she knows if she were to come out against, you know, or come out in favor of a vaccine mandate for private employers in Kansas, she may as well just, I mean, put up the tombstone of her 2022 re-election bid right now. You might as well just go do that if she were to come out in favor of this. She knows that she can't have any chance of winning re-election, so she comes out against it. But then you've got Derek Schmidt, who is her likely opponent in this race. He's the current attorney general. He came out and he responded to Governor Kelly and said, "This was not OSHA's decision, Governor. This was a result of our Republican attorneys general lawsuits and federal judges telling the Biden administration it cannot proceed with this illegal mandate. We're going to keep fighting as we have been since this was announced in September." So that was Derek Schmidt, the current attorney general, responding to Governor Kelly, and he's likely to be her opponent here in this governor's race. And I'm very proud of myself for saying attorneys general and not attorney generals.
That's twice today.
Yeah, I know. I'm doing it well. So I'm 2 for 2 there, John. 2 for 2. Like Salvi Perez off to a hot start here in this one. Still got an hour and 45 left to screw it up. But attorneys general is what Derek Schmidt said and who he credits. And he's also making a good point. If everyone just sat on the sidelines and all the attorneys general sat on the sidelines and the state legislatures did nothing, well, you know, people would just say, eh, we'll just keep going with this whole deal. We'll just keep riding it out, riding it through. And, you know, we will hope that private employers just do it because, well, they want to comply. And that's always been, I believe, the hope from the administration. I think they know deep down this is not constitutional to demand that private employers get their employees vaccinated or test them every week. They know this, but they're just hoping to coerce and scare people in the meantime to do it. And then, you know, let the court system ride it out. But by then, they'll get what they want. And this is the problem when you run on this idea that a single man can stop a virus. This is the problem. You can't live up to the campaign promise. You just can't do it, and they haven't done it. And that's why they're resorting to these kind of desperate measures. And that's what these are, desperate measures, and politically unpopular ones as well. 5767710. Our text line is 816-576-7710. Josh Hawley is going to be here bottom of this hour. We will talk to him. Meantime, oh, man. Trans athletes, trans in general, back in the news. The Olympics makes a decision. The International Olympic Committee made a decision on trans athletes. And the most famous author in the world was not invited to a reunion over comments that she made about transgenders. Yes. We'll tell you that story, who it was, coming up on KCMO Talk Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM. Wow, poor J.K. Rowling, you know, most famous author on the planet. Is that fair? I don't know. It seems fair to me to say J.K. Rowling, author of the Harry Potter series, most famous author in the world?
Yeah. Okay. She's in the top three, at least, if not the top.
I would say so. I would say so. So, J.K. Rowling, nowhere to be found when the movie stars reunited for a magical Harry Potter 20th anniversary special. Yeah, nowhere to be found. And no one's commenting on why. So Rowling's representatives, Warner Bros., nobody, is saying, where's the brains behind this whole operation, huh? Well, there's some speculation here that the reason behind it is that J.K. Rowling had the audacity over the summer to say that men and women are different. And that deeply offended those who are trying to make the claim that they aren't. J.K. Rowling tweeted out back in June of 2020, so last summer, she shared an article talking about how basically, you know, transgenderism works. And she said, quote, people who menstruate, I'm sure there used to be a word for those people. Someone help me out. Womben, wimpund, womund. And she's mocking the fact that we don't call them people who menstruate. We call them women. That's what we call them. She got a ton of backlash from transgender groups, far left media, because they take offense to the use of the word women. All right, because there are no women. GLAAD, a nonprofit dedicated to LGBTQ issues, denounced Rowling's tweets on their own Twitter account. They wrote, this is so good. I forgot this story from last summer. This is great. I mean, last summer was such an S show. I forget half the stories. Here, J.K. Rowling continues to align herself with an ideology which willfully distorts facts. Willfully distorts facts to say only women can menstruate. About gender identity and people who are trans. In 2020, there's no excuse for targeting trans people.
Show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
Wow. So clearly, it looks like those who run Harry Potter are buckling to that crowd. Because, boy, they could not have to defend themselves for believing that the word women is still okay when referring to a crowd of females. That is the most bizarre story. The most bizarre story that J.K. Rowling, nowhere to be found, missing. Some say that she is banned, and no one's really addressing why. No one is saying why. But all the speculation that I'm seeing from media across the board is that, well, we just can't have her here. Even NPR wrote about this. NPR wrote, following Rowling's trans comments, several actors from the Potter film spoke out in defense of trans people and denounced Rowling's actions. Daniel Radcliffe, he's the one who plays...
Nobody cares.
Today's word is tool.
Yeah, tool. Daniel Radcliffe did so in an essay of his own. Emma Watson shared her support for trans people on Twitter. And I don't know who the Grint guy is, spoke out in the UK's Sunday Times and later in an interview with Esquire. Rowling's tweets have continued to stir controversy. Last year, her apparent mockery of gender-inclusive language used by a media outlet garnered more backlash. J.K. Rowling, oh my goodness.
And would not our well-principled thespian sacrifice all profits made then from such endeavor? He wondered, like a House of Commons statement.
What a bizarre world. Most famous author in the world can't go to a reunion of the movies that she was the brain power behind because she had the audacity to say, women can only menstruate. Wow. What a time to be alive.
Talk about a bombshell.
And then we got this. The IOC, International Olympic Committee, announced a new framework that includes guidelines stipulating that transgender athletes should not have to lower their testosterone levels to compete in sports. So literally, not even like there's some guideline where if you're a dude and you want to compete against the women because that's the only way it works, right? I mean, let's be honest. That's the way it typically works. If you're a dude and you want to compete against the chicks in the Olympics, now you don't even have to lower your testosterone. Literally, like, you can just show up as a man, basically. Say you're a trans and, you know, go win a couple of weightlifting competitions. Good times all around.
Tape it, tuck it, you're good to go, bro.
Oh, gosh. Oh, gosh. More or less there, John. All right, so here's what they're saying now, the International Olympic Committee. What do you got for me, Mark? You got something good or not?
Oh, I was just they called J.K. Rowling the TERF.
Oh.
And that was in Dave Chappelle's.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
She was a trans-excluding radical feminist, and the text line brought that up.
Oh, okay. Gosh, good thing. Now we need another acronym. TERF. Just what we need. TERF. All right, so now for the IOC, the framework for this new rule from the Olympic Committee states that no athlete should be barred from competition based on the perception of an unfair and disproportionate advantage due to their gender. The perception of an unfair and disproportionate advantage. No, it's not a perception. It is a factual unfair and disproportionate advantage. Because on average, men are stronger and faster than women. On average. Doesn't mean that, you know, a female can't beat me in a 100-yard dash. There are plenty that can, and there are plenty that would today. Now, won't be John, but they would beat me. But now the IOC is saying, oh, no, 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 no. Now, back in 2015, here's what the IOC did. They had guidelines that allowed trans athletes to compete if their testosterone levels fell below the committee's established limit. But those are now gone. Those are now completely gone. So you just can, you know what, show up as a guy, say you're a girl, don't have to even have lower testosterone numbers, and get in there. Get in there and get rolling. Now, you recall over the summer, Laura Hubbard of Team New Zealand competed in weightlifting. A man turned female, and as I recall, I think he, she, they got last place, or like didn't even come close to meddling, didn't even come close. But like, this is the kind of stuff we're now having to normalize. J.K. Rowling gets shamed in not even getting to participate in a Harry Potter event because she believes only women can menstruate. And now the International Olympic Committee is trying to go so woke that they're coming out and they're saying, not only are we allowing men to compete against women, you literally can just show up as a guy, say you're a woman, testosterone levels can be to the moon, and there's nothing anyone can do about it. And we're just supposed to sit here and say, yeah, I mean, that's just how it works. Yeah, come on in. You know, you want to compete in the Olympics? Come on down. Who's looking out for the women, by the way? This is like, they look at it as, well, we got to be pro-trans. How about looking at it as anti-woman? Because that's what this is. This is anti-female policy from the International Olympic Committee. But, you know, being pro-women is so 2018. So last year, or really 2 years ago. Women's rights, please. That's old news. Coming up next, let's talk to Senator Josh Hawley. He's right around the corner here on KCMO Talk Radio. Well, I got this here from Brian Lowry of the Kansas City Star. He is reporting here in the last 10 minutes or so that Ted Cruz has made an endorsement in the Kansas Attorney General's race, rolling with Kris Kobach. That's just coming down from Brian Lowry about 13 minutes ago. Ted Cruz has jumped into the Kansas Attorney General's race. Now, Cruz is very close with Axiom. Jeff Rowe made his name up here. They are advising Kobach in this election, and he gets an endorsement from Ted Cruz, which I would say is definitely worth something in a Kansas Attorney General race. Now, Kobach, of course, is going up against Kelly Warren, is his main opponent in this race right now. So that's and she's a local state senator here in Johnson County. Very sharp, very good, but Kobach has much more of a statewide name ID, obviously. So he's the front runner in this whole thing. No doubt about that. No doubt about that. But that's very interesting that Ted Cruz is deciding, yes, I'm going to jump in to the Kansas Attorney General's race. So we'll see what that means going forward. But just a little tidbit there that just broke in the last 10 minutes or so. All right. So we got a couple of folks who made a bold move. What did they try to do? Well, three Mexican citizens were pulled from the ocean after trying to get into this country by swimming. Why would you try to swim when Joe Biden's basically rolling out a red carpet for you? Can somebody explain that to me? I mean, I get swimming under Trump, but swimming under Biden when the guy literally is like, come on in, and once you get here, got the red carpet, you want a little Chardonnay, we actually hand out glasses of champagne when you get across. Why would you try to swim? What are you doing, John?
I think it's like the ultimate warrior contest. You know, walking in, that's for pansies. I'm a triathlon my way into this place.
Oh, right? Gosh.
We're going to swim in and then bike up the Baja Peninsula. And then run on in from San Diego.
Oh, goodness. Little Iron Man action going on here.
That's it.
Oh, boy. All right. So what happened here is San Diego lifeguards pulled two adults and a child from the ocean. I mean, what are you doing with the kid? What do you think you're going to do? Put the kid on your back and swim across the ocean into America? I mean, what are you doing? So San Diego lifeguards pulled two adults and a child from the ocean after it was reported that dozens of people were attempting to swim from Mexico into the United States. Boy, when Trump said they're not sending their best, they are not sending their best. If you're swimming across to get to America in this environment, boy, let's just put it this way. You're far more likely to be a drain on the system than you are to prop up the system. So Tijuana officials reported the crossing attempt to authorities in San Diego at about 9:30 at night on Tuesday. Lifeguard Lieutenant Rick Romero said the three people pulled from the water were not injured. And I'm glad that they weren't, especially the child. Border Patrol agents took them in the custody, man, a woman, and a boy. Now, do we know what their preferred pronouns were, though? I mean, we can't have this assuming man, boy, man, woman, boy thing. Did the Border Patrol get their preferred pronouns before they gave this report to the Associated Press? That's what I need to know. All Mexican citizens. Authorities continued to search the waters, but did not find any additional people. Now, also reports about 150 miles up the coast, authorities discovered an overturned panga boat floating near the Malibu shoreline, but no people were found. And these are like small boats that are often used in smuggling immigrants across the border. But I'm just sitting here and I'm thinking to myself, what are we doing? Why are we doing this? Why would you possibly try to swim with a child to get into this country? I've often said, you know, if I wanted to better my life or better my family's life, you know what I would do? I would try to get to this country legally, especially under Joe Biden. I would absolutely do it. It would be our job, the United States' job, to make sure that we have an immigration system that is lawful and is legal and actually allows us to learn who and what is coming into the country. That's it. It's like we talked about earlier. You had 100,000 overdose deaths in this country the past 12 months for the first time ever in the United States. A large part of that is because of fentanyl coming across the southern border by the Mexican drug cartels by way of China. And this administration is doing nothing. It's not just about the human smuggling. It's about the fentanyl pouring across this border. David, it is in Lenexa. Hey, David, good morning.
Hey, Pete. How are you?
I'm doing well, David. What's going on, my man?
Hey, I learned something the other day to kind of address the question that you just asked about, you know, why would Mexicans be swimming in the ocean to try to get across when they can just, you know, come right through the border? I saw something just the other day where Ted Cruz was addressing the floor or whomever it was, but it was in the chambers, and he was lambasting the Democrats. And one of the things he did mention is that if the cartel doesn't approve for someone to go through the border into the United States, the cartel will shoot them, kill them. And so I would suspect that maybe now these Mexicans are who want to get through, or whoever, maybe they're not even Mexicans, you know, whoever they are trying to get through, that they didn't have approval from the cartel. Mm-hmm. And so they were looking for other means to get through to avoid getting killed by the cartel.
Well, that's a sobering analysis, David, yeah. But thank you for the call.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it popped up on my YouTube feed. Ted Cruz was just going after all the Democrats. It was pretty educational to hear him talk about, you know, what the cartel's doing, and it's pretty sad. It kind of hit on what you did a few months ago when you were up in D.C.
Yeah. No, that's a good point there, David. Way to be a loyal listener as well. Good job. Good job by you, my man.
My pleasure. Thank you for all you do.
You bet. Yeah, we were up in D.C. in late September doing a couple of shows, talking to ICE agents and Border Patrol agents and everybody else. On the text line, Pete, swim on in, and on the way by, you can stroke Joe's hairy leg. All right, there you go. On the text line, that's 4052. Not too bad. Not too bad. Pete, they're swimming here to get their $450,000 a pop from the administration. That's right. They swim in. By the way, the lifeguard out of San Diego saves their lives, but then they'll probably say that ICE mistreated them, or, you know, the Border Patrol mistreated them, and then they'll sue us, and then Joe will say, here's a $500,000 check per person. That's a very good point on the text line. Very good point on the text line. Going to come up with this, a random race that should scare the Democrats mightily. It's not a race that any of us are going to think about, but it's one that, you know, tells a story. We'll tell you about it coming up next.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now, here is my conversation with Jacob Null. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.